This is the Pick Six Podcast, post-spring football edition, pre-recruiting in the summer edition. I'm Sam McEwen, along with Evan Bland and Dirk Chatelain joining us. Tom Chattel may drop in. You never know. Tom, as he posted on Twitter, is a little bit on the mend from pneumonia, so we'll be continuing to pray for him. Hopefully he's in here today, but if not, we'll hope he's doing well. And since this is May 6th, I want to wish all the mothers out there a happy Mother's Day. We all have mothers, and we all have wives who are our mothers. So we thank the mothers and wives in our lives, and we hope that yours have a good Mother's Day. So thanks for that. It's weird to say that and also recap the spring games for the latest spring game we've ever had. May 1st was the spring game, right? May 1st. So May 1st was the spring game. Most boring first half of a spring game I've ever seen. Hopefully they never use that format again in the first half. Worst format ever. Ever. Don't ever use that again. Might as well not even have it. I'll just have one half then. But we'll recap that. We'll talk a little bit about the quarterback play. I've got some questions that we're going to ask post-spring, which is right now. Sometime over the summer, and then right before camp, and then right before the season. And we'll see how those answers change, and if they change. Nebraska added Fordham this week, dropped southeastern Louisiana. I'm not sure that the opponent they added is any worse, honestly, than southeastern Louisiana, but most people would say they are. And then we'll talk a little baseball. And Nebraska, you know, with all the world to gain, lost three in a row to Rutgers. But we'll get to all that here in a minute. Maybe Tom will drop by. You never know. I want to remind everybody that our sponsor is the Schwalbach Agency. Team Schwalbach is a family-owned Allstate insurance agency with four licensed insurance pros, saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska, and they also insure all the big boy toys, motorcycles, boats, RVs, off-road vehicles. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mostek, or Kyle Murdoch a call at 402-590-5200. We're getting into roof season with the hail and the storms. Tornadoes already hitting, so pay attention to that over the summer. Free, no obligation insurance reviews and quotes are going to make sure all their fellow Nebraska fans are properly protected. Again, you can contact them at 402-590-5200 or www.nebraskaallstate.com. That's www.nebraskaallstate.com. Thank you to Team Schwalbach. All right. Spring game. Felt more like normal. The fans there helped. Interviewing guys in person after the game felt better. So from a COVID perspective, it didn't feel like, you know, an apocalypse or a pandemic. It didn't feel like Rutgers. The last game I'd covered was Rutgers, and I'll never cover anything like that ever again. That was the strangest experience that I've ever had covering a game. Literally an empty stadium, you know, about four security people in there. Rutgers had two reporters. Nebraska pool was four. Moose didn't show up. It was Garrett Classy and like three other people. And that was about the entire viewing party of the stadium. It was very strange. It was very dark. Felt like you were, you know, entering a disease pool. The police were outside with police dogs. It was very strange. So has this anybody, wasn't that. It was
has
good.
Has anybody completed an athletic event with Rutgers involved and said, man, that was really good. That was a lot of fun. That was fulfilling. Mm-hmm. That was satisfactory. Rutgers is just like, they're the dark cloud on every sporting event that I've ever known.
For what it's worth, I didn't enjoy it at the time, especially because they kept all the doors open. I think they were afraid of like the circulation. So they kept the doors open at like 27 degrees. And so it was about 40 degrees in the press box. And we were eating Jersey Mike's subs. But I'll never forget it, and I'm glad I did it for that reason. That's a story that I can tell people later on. You know, when in the pandemic, the last game that I covered was this weird situation, and all the roads in New Jersey were empty. And very strange. It's like a scene from a movie. Anyway, that was the last time I covered
one. I think Springsteen wrote a song about the Rutgers football game experience during the pandemic.
He probably did. Probably did. It'd be like the lost lyric to Lost in the Flood. So I can't even imagine what that would be, you know, how that lyric would go, but it certainly fits that song. Anyway, this spring game was better in that sense, that it was just, the weather was nice. We were outside. The players were there. It felt like something close to normal. I'll open the floor and just say, what, if anything, came out of that event? I think very little came out of the first half. I do think there were a few things to glean out of the second. But what, if anything, jumped out at you? Either one.
Go, Evan.
I mean, yeah, I agree. The game itself was, it was lacking in any sort of real intrigue. I mean, the backup quarterbacks were interesting. I thought what we saw there was essentially what we saw in the open practice a week earlier. I mean, it's hard to get a full judgment of them with the no contact aspect. I mean, especially Logan Smothers, I thought, you know, you take away the tackling and his ability to run, that's kind of his biggest asset. You know, Harburg impressed. His arm strength was evident. Obviously, he makes the play there at the end. You see what some of the guys, the backups, did in the second half, which was good to see. I didn't think the running back room necessarily saw anybody gain much separation. That seems like a competition that's going to continue over into the fall. But I would just honestly echo what I took most away from it was talking with some of the guys afterwards in a somewhat normal interview session. I mean, we heard from Gabe Irvin for the first time. We had Turner Corcoran coming out wearing a Run the Damn Ball hat. You know, Samari Toure talking and Cam Jurgens both talking in more relaxed settings that weren't Zoom, that weren't, you know, weird distanced post-practice sound bites. Like, it felt like for the first time since early March 2020, like, it was a chance to actually kind of be face-to-face with some of these guys and get a sense of how they feel about things. And so to me, that was the bigger takeaway was, you know, that 2020 team was, I've never known a team less than I did that team, because everything we did was based on Zoom. There were no organic side conversations, yes, no little laughs, anything like that.
And so we really didn't get to know Luke McCaffrey. I think McCaffrey did one interview, maybe one interview prior to that season, and he seemed like a hostage in every single interview we did. Like, it was like, yeah, I don't know. Like, man, I don't think it's his fault. He did not come across well in those interviews. Like, he just came across as like, I'm not going to say anything because I don't think I can say anything. It just felt, he came across like a hostage.
Yeah.
And you compare that to like Smothers and Harburg, who only spoke once this spring, but you saw their personalities a little bit, especially Harburg. And so that part was nice. Dirk.
Well, I think the backup quarterback was probably the thing that people were talking about most. You know, it's really hard with the non-contact stuff in the first half. I think all eyes are pretty much on Nebraska's skill players, so running backs and wide receivers. I thought the running backs, exceeded expectations this spring and even in the spring game a little bit. The running backs are probably, you know, still a big question mark. I still think the defense is going to be really good, even without Honus, even without Will Honus. That just seems like a unit that, you know, Sam, I've enjoyed your Chenander stuff. And I just think that's a unit that really could be as good a Nebraska defense as we've seen since.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, maybe 2011. You know, I mean, maybe not. I don't know. I think you could make a case that it's the best since 2011. So we'll see. They got to prove it. But I think, you know, the defense having just kind of doing their thing, and some of those guys obviously didn't play. But I would still, just in terms of format, I still think it would be fun to turn this thing into kind of a football jamboree where, you know, you do a 40-yard dash thing. You do, you know, a quarterback, you know, skills competition with, you know, guys trying to hit uprights. And I mean, if you're not going to take it seriously as a scrimmage, then make it fun and do a bunch of different stuff. I feel like they're trying to have it both ways. Still, they want to have a scrimmage, but they don't really want to have a scrimmage. And it just kind of comes across as, you know, something you do at a recess. And it's like, well, if we're going to be silly, let's at least lean into the silly. And I keep waiting for him to do stuff like that. Now somebody's going to pull a hammy running a 40-yard dash, and, you know, everybody's going to scold the coaches for that too. So I realize there's no easy way out, but I agree with you that the format of this thing isn't very appealing at this point.
Yeah, I would just go to a scrimmage. I think players mentally prepare themselves when they know there's going to be full contact. Obviously, the green jerseys on the quarterbacks would remain the same, but what they did the first year was fine. Actually, the first 2 years, that format was just fine. I'm not sure what the larger purpose of the first half was. Nobody got hurt in the second half that I'm aware of. I think somebody may have pulled something in the first half and kind of hobbled off, but I'd just go to what they had in the second half and just keep that. I don't really think the receivers, it seemed odd to me that it's like, we're not going to tackle Oliver Martin, Omar Manning, and Samari Toure, but we're going to tackle all the other receivers. That didn't seem to make a lot of sense. I think they won't do that again. Frost's demeanor after the game was like, that was too easy for the defense. I think when you have a bunch of recruits in attendance, you want to score football points, you know, put points on the board, throw it around, and the wind and all that other stuff prevented it. I like where Nebraska's lines are. Some of that's just eyeballing it. Some of that's talking to Austin. Some of that's Tuioti, you know, he's pretty neutral, honestly. I think he wants his guys to keep getting better, but I like where their lines are physically, strength, length, height, width, size, just sheer size. I like where they are. I agree with you that the linebacker spot is going to actually be pretty good inside, outside. They need JoJo Adoma to stay healthy. He has a track record of staying healthy, so hopefully he does. Love the tight ends. I think, Evan, you're right when you say the running backs didn't have much separation except for the two oldest guys, Tompkins and Johnson. I think they probably are checking their whole guard today or after that game, because what I saw from Morrison and Yant and Scott and Irvin tells me those guys are just as good and maybe better than Johnson or Tompkins. That's just me talking. And so those guys probably got to check their whole cart, because I don't know that they're going to necessarily be at the top of the charts there. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. And then I'm a little still worried about the skill spots. I think the receivers have to continue to get better. Martinez has to get better. I thought he played fine in the spring game, but that's probably the word I would use for it. And then I think their defensive backfield has got to stay healthy and needs to stop the deep pass. So we'll see.
Yeah, the passing game to me is still, we'll see. I think it, Adrian Martinez does look faster and quicker. I mean, I don't think that's much dispute on that. Now, is that because he knows he's not going to get hit? Is that because, you know, he's indeed lost a little weight and gained a little bit of strength, and, you know, can that carry over? I don't know, but I think if Martinez can be a little bit more dangerous, you know, like might go the distance dangerous, mm-hmm. I think that creates, you know, adds to the conundrum of this offense. It's like, okay, if Adrian's best skill set is the fact that he might go 60 yards, are we going to run him 20 times a game? It's just, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out. I'm not convinced that he's going to be the Big Ten's best passer, even with better receivers.
Mm-hmm. Me too. They're running some stuff schematically, even on the spring game. They're running some stuff that they used to run with Taylor Martinez. So in particular, there was a play where they pulled a guard, and I think the opposite play side tackle. So it was Sichterman and I think the left tackle. I can't remember. It was Sichterman or the left guard or the left tackle. And they faked a pass, or they faked a run to the left, and then they had Martinez follow those two pullers. And if you go back to the 2012 Michigan State game, you'll see that Taylor scored a, 75-yarder on that exact same play. and it's very, very similar. And I like some of the things we're doing. I mean, it's more power football, pin and pull, get guys out in front, let your quarterback kind of rumble. But at the same time, you really do want to make sure that you're throwing the football. And if there's one thing that Taylor Martinez could do, and he was not a good passer on a lot of fronts, but Taylor was good at throwing the ball from 10 yards in. He was good at it. Go back and watch the games. When he needed to throw the ball to Quincy Enunwa on that little double out, it was right where it needed to be. When he threw quick screens, except for the 2012 title game, it was a pretty good throw. He did a good job of throwing that pass, and he was good at those things. And Martinez still needs work there. I mean, it's just one of the things they've got to get better at is when you're throwing the ball on a dump pass, A, you got to throw it quicker, and B, you got to throw it not a foot over the guy's head. And so there's little things there that I think they've got to continue to improve. And some of that's with him, you know. And if you're going to – the completion rate's great. 75% is super, but, you know, 6.6 yards per attempt is not very good. And I think that's where he was at. It may have been lower than that. So he's got to work on that. We still don't really know anything about special teams, I don't think. It's just no way to know. So, and that's a huge question mark. A fan sent me, and I'm going to start doing this thing called a stat chat like every week, very soon, about like just key stats that people need to think about and like ways to think about the football game that's maybe a little different than we have in the past. And so I've really, really, really been trying to harp on this idea of how important it is to have a kickoff specialist. Like, it's not a joke. It's like one of the most important positions on the team now. So this fan, Stu Manji, Eric is, I don't know. Anyway, his handle is at Stu Manji. He sent me this, and this graphic is amazing. In a 3-year total, opponents kicked the ball off 187 times, got 87 touchbacks, and allowed 1,181 yards to Nebraska. Nebraska's kickoff return unit. In that same time period, Nebraska kicked the ball off 178 times, got only 60 touchbacks, and wait for this, allowed 2,125 return yards and 3 touchdowns.
A double?
Double.
Wow.
Double rainbow. I mean, double kickoff return. Unbelievable. That's unbelievable. And, you know, it's unforgivable. No, and the point is they don't have a kickoff special. They don't have somebody who can kick it into the end zone. And if you, in particular, if you look at this graphic, you will notice, and he did a great job of it. It's on one of my whatevers. It was pretty comparable in 2018. The returns were awful because Maurice Washington didn't know how to return them. But Nebraska's touchback percentage in 2018 was 47.2%. That's because Caleb Lightbourne was kicking them off. And if Caleb could do anything, he could kick the ball a long way straight. So it's pretty comparable that year, 490 return yards for Nebraska, 695 for the opponents. In 2019, it went 417 to 932. In 2020, it was 274 and 498. So it's just that kind of stuff. There's just no other way to resolve it other than to get a guy that can do it, or to have superstar, you know, coverage units. And we won't know anything about that until it happens. The punting issue, I think, is still an issue. I don't know that they have an elite punter. It's really hard to tell. And
Sam, I just think, I mean, this is the – we're going to get into some deeper stuff, but this is the theme of Nebraska football over the last 20 years. It's like this silent erosion of all the things that you don't necessarily notice. You know, it's kickoff return yardage. It's turnover margin. It's, you know, field position. It's, you know, it's, there was a prominent one that I was going to point out, that slips my mind, but it's just, it's crazy how, like, I find this over and over that you don't, it's like you don't recognize how bad it is until you really start digging into it. Your eyes to, oh, I was going to say, the pass rush thing. You know, they're just all of these components that make up a good football team. You know, there's 50 boxes to check, right? Mm-hmm. And Nebraska is just flat out terrible at like 10 of them. And you don't even necessarily notice it until you start really, really digging. And I'm sure people that know football better than I do, you know, do notice it with their eyes. But man, I just can't get over stuff like that. You know, if you took those numbers and compared them to any Power 5 team in the country, I guarantee you Nebraska is in the last three or four. And it's that way in so many different little things that you wonder how this team wins as many games as it does. You know, it's like they're not good, but based on some of those numbers that we cite over and over and over, I always come back to turnovers. It should be worse than it is. And I just, Nebraska's got to clean that stuff up. I mean, even if they can just get to mediocre at that stuff, can you imagine how much better they could be?
Much. I mean, it's just no question that the things that have sunk the program, like where we're sitting, I mean, I haven't watched a game on TV, but I'm sitting there at Rutgers and I'm like, Nebraska is so much bigger and stronger than Rutgers that it's kind of comical. Like Rutgers was small and slow and weak by comparison. And I'm like, and it's 28-21 because this team cannot hold on to the stinking football. It should have been 42-10. I'm not kidding. The physical differences were vast. And it was obvious in person. I mean, Rutgers is just a small football team, and Greg Schiano will change that, but they're small. And they almost won the game because Nebraska's game management and turnover issues and special teams issues are so significant that they almost, you know, found a way to, it's like a company that has actually a pretty good product that you'd want to buy if only the front of the house knew how to sell it. Or if only, you know, if only you had somebody, customer service on the phone who knew how to answer a phone. Instead, when they can't answer the phone, they got butter all over their hands and they drop the phone. They only answer like 8 out of 10 phones because 2 of them, they can't actually open the phone. It's these little things that seem so obvious to us, you know, as journalists, but seem elusive to the team. And of course, we're not 6'4 and 325 pounds. We're not Ethan Piper jumping on a false start. We're not that guy. We don't know what it's like to be him. So it's easy to judge. It's easy to judge. But at the same time, so many other teams don't do these things. They just don't do them. So at some point, you want to see Nebraska not do them too. You ready to talk some big questions?
Yeah.
All right. So I sent these guys some questions yesterday. We're going to try to answer these now, but we'll also – a couple different times during the offseason, we will do it again. And then maybe during the season. Now you guys can, I'm going to keep the first question I sent you to last because I think that one's kind of an interesting question. But we'll start with this. What, if any, big picture aspect of Nebraska's team looks like a Big Ten contender? And by Big Ten contender, I mean winning the West Division.
I can go. I mean, I don't know how big picture we're talking. If we're talking on the field big, we've touched on the defense, but with the amount of experience they have back, with how they finished the year last year, I mean, obviously that's going to be a strength of the team. That could be something that they could lean on as a potential contender. But I think in a bigger sense, what the program has shown in the last few years is that they're good at talent acquisition. I mean, they're regularly pulling in top 25 type recruiting classes. Now the development and all that, that's a totally different conversation, but in terms of getting recruits to campus for summer, you know, for Friday night lights events, for fall recruiting, for the commits that they have gotten just to that point, just up to signing day, they've done a very good job beating the bushes, finding guys in interesting places, leading the West or being right near the top of the West in terms of star rankings and all that stuff translates, as we've seen with some teams at the top. So just in that sense, they have been very good at identifying kids, putting out a blanket net of offers, and then getting the guys to campus and ultimately committing. They've been very good at that.
Yeah. Sam, I want to state the obvious because I think it's Nebraska's strength right now. And I think their defensive coordinator and his the experience and depth that he's accumulated on that side of the ball is Big Ten West champion caliber right now. I would not have said that 3 years ago. I'm shocked that I'm saying it now. But Nebraska, I think, is going to have a really, really good defense. And so if they do contend in the West, I think it's going to be because of that. You know, all three levels, I think, are really good. You know, obviously health is critical, but, you know, if they can find any semblance of an edge rusher, I think Nebraska could be a top, you know, 15 defense in the country. Mm. That guy doesn't appear to be on the roster. But even still, I think, you know, Nebraska can potentially be the best defense in the West.
Mm. I agree with you. I do wonder, and it's a very small sample size, but Evan and I felt really good about Blaze Gunnarsson coming out of high school, and he had a nice spring game. I mean, it's no joke that he shoved Turner Corcoran back into a pocket. He went and got a sack. It was a legit thing. So that was a good play. Mm-hmm. And he's a big kid. I thought that was nice. I know they still love Jamari Butler, and Feldarius Payne's going to be a motor guy. So now that Payne's lost a little bit of weight and he had a weird last year, what you hope is you can get 5 or 6 sacks from him out of just motor. He plays really hard. He never quits. And he's not maybe the fastest guy, but he'll get you something just because he plays hard. And so I think their pass rush will be slightly better. But when you say, Dirk, when you said, you know, 2011, I was like, yeah, I agree with that defense. I think 2013 was good. And the thing that defense had that this one doesn't was Randy Gregory. And that dovetails into your draft thing, which we'll get to in a minute. Of like this idea that what Nebraska lacks is just an elite player. Like they don't have that first round pick or second round pick for that matter. So that's something that we'll get to that in a minute. What remains the program's biggest big picture weakness? So big picture weakness, what remains the program's biggest big picture weakness?
I mean, it's the identity piece. What do they want to be? You know, that when Scott Frost and company arrived, they continued to recruit those smaller, quicker type athletes. You know, you've detailed it recently, Sam, but that's transformed over the last couple cycles or evolved into more of a bigger bodied sort of approach with the receivers, the skill positions, certainly on the lines. So it feels like, you know, Scott Frost's famous quote when he came was that the Big Ten would adjust to them, and now they're adjusting to the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. But it feels to me like they're still trying to find that sweet spot between Big Ten maulers and that AAC kind of spread style offense. Mm-hmm. And as I was thinking about it, you know, when they arrived, the message was that the staff would have a long runway, a long time to establish something and build on that over the course of many years. But when you look at what they've recruited and brought in, it feels like the first couple of years of that almost kind of fell by the wayside because they were still figuring out what they wanted to be. I think when they arrived, it seemed like they knew what they wanted and they had a vision for what they wanted. But I think in reality, it's taken them 2 or 3 years to adjust to the Big Ten and figure out what that is. And so if you don't have that identity in mind, then you can't recruit a specific guy. And if you can't recruit the specific players, then you can't develop them. And then that translates into what we've seen in the NFL draft, which is not very many guys going in the last 4 to 5 years. So to me, it starts with identity. What do you want to be? And then everything else that we can talk about, development and such, flows out of that.
Dirk?
Yeah, Evan makes a great point. I think, you know, fans are, you know, for good reason, frustrated by Scott Frost and where he is in year 4.
Yeah.
But the reality is, and this is not an excuse for it, but the reality is I think they're closer to year 2. I mean, they kind of just dropped the ball, I think, the first couple years. They didn't, as Evan said, I don't think they really knew what they were getting into. And I think where they are on defense right now is where they should be on offense right now. Now some of that is because of the super senior stuff, but But I felt like, you know, Eric Chenander had a better idea of what he wanted to do and how he wanted to do it than Scott Frost did on offense. To get to your big picture weakness question, I'm tempted to say the skill position players, because I think it's, if you went back 3-4 years and said this is where Nebraska would be from a skill position standpoint, I think we'd all be shocked. I'm tempted to say player development, but I'm going to give them a little bit of a benefit of the doubt there, based on how they've, you know, improved on the offensive and defensive lines. I think the biggest picture weakness is what we already talked about, which is just the game management stuff. Yeah. Nebraska has been very, very poor at all the little things. And that's basically the difference between them and a program like Iowa or Northwestern, you know, that has a breakout season. Nebraska has to clean that stuff up. And I don't know whether it's concentration, whether it's coaching, whether it's, you know, practice regimen. I think there's lots of potential things that it could be. But for Nebraska to be taken seriously, they've got to clean up all that little stuff. And I feel like that's the biggest program weakness right now.
I echo both those things. I'll just add this, that I think Nebraska's got a head coach who is trying to juggle a lot of things all at once. He's trying to be a lot of different things, I think, to a lot of different people. He's trying to appeal to his former teammates. He's trying to appeal to the fan base to some degree. He's trying to worry about the city of Lincoln and the businesses down there and the impact on them. You know, I think there's some in there of like, I need to run this program the way Tom Osborne ran it. And I would just hope that at some point Frost is able to reach a point in his career here where he's like, I'm just going to do me and I'm going to do it my way. And if people don't like that, they don't have to like it. But I'm the one who's got the job and I'm the one who has the pressure, and we're going to go ahead and just do it the way I want to do it. And I'm still not sure that he's there. And he would probably hear that and go, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. But there's just this part of me that thinks, I don't know why a guy like this wants a team of 160 guys. I don't know why, other than to do it because that's what you're supposed to do when you're at Nebraska. That's the only conclusion I can come to, because it's not that I don't see the potential benefits of that, but it just doesn't strike me as a guy who just absolutely loves recruiting literally 22 walk-ons a year and 24 scholarship recruits and this massive revolving door. Cause you can't keep all those walk-ons. It's money ball. Essentially you're doing, and Dirk, you wrote about this, what, 12 years ago when you did the formula piece. Osborne's approach was moneyball. It was, we're going to bring so many guys onto the team that like somewhere in there, we're going to get a couple of diamonds in the rough over here. And we're going to get, and the walk-ons are going to affect this scholarship guy over here. And when it all comes together, we're going to have a better team than most rosters because we put it together differently. And my point would be that it's A, harder to do that than ever now because school costs a lot more money and guys are a lot less willing to put themselves through 5 years of punishment to just stay out there and be practice fodder. And B, it just doesn't seem to be like his, maybe it is his DNA, like that he just really loves having 160 guys on the team. Maybe it is, but it doesn't seem like it. And I didn't understand the hiring an analyst or off the field analyst to run special teams last year. And then making the pointed statement of saying, well, we don't want to put that on his plate. And then putting it on his plate a year later, because it was obvious that you had to put it on his plate because you couldn't, like, there's been decisions that have been made along the way that just don't make a lot of sense to me. And it feels like they're trying to do things in a, like maybe in a smarter way or in a, what you would call an heterodox way that is just not all that necessary. And it feels like at times trying too hard or I want this guy at this position because he's bigger and I want to do that and that. I'm just like, maybe you should just play the guy that's the best to play there. It feels like at times there's just been situations like that. The quarterback switch last year was odd to me. If you're not going to give Luke McCaffrey more than a 2.5 games to do it, like he got a game and a half. And then they pulled the plug. So why did you switch to the guy if you weren't going to give him the whole season to show what he could do? Adrian Martinez had 2.5 years to be the guy, and then you bench him, and then you give his replacement a game and a half. What are you doing? Like, why? Why not give him the whole season? And I think it's because, well, we lost Illinois, so we can't lose again. So now we got to put – like, it just – it's those kind of issues that I think they have to still work through.
And I think – I often think about what you once said, Dirk, about this idea that it's one thing to say you're going through a rebuild or this is going to be a tough year, and then it's another thing to actually live it out week by week. And so, like, I think sometimes maybe that's
you lose
something
patience.
That they've – something that they've fallen into too, where it's said, okay, this is going to, we're trying to accomplish X, Y, Z this year. We're going to rebuild. We're going to replenish the talent, whatnot. But then the moment comes and you hear the pissed off fans in Memorial Stadium and you hear how that affects people. And Scott Frost is extremely plugged into Husker Nation. He knows what guys are feeling. And so you make decisions in the moment to try to win the games and find success in the short term. And then that kind of handicaps you in the long term. And it just feels like, so often he's kind of stuck somewhere in the middle.
Yes. At times it doesn't feel like football. It feels more like you're trying to do something else and not just play good football, but like for the things. And I'm not trying to be critical of him. I'm saying for his sake, I hope he just does it his way and doesn't worry too much about which constituency is happy or not happy about that. He just does it his way. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't.
Isn't the Oklahoma Southeast Louisiana thing a classic example of this, though? I mean, wasn't that Frost sort of dipping his toe in the water and saying, this is actually – I actually don't want to get my brains beat in by Oklahoma in September. I want to start 4-0 and give myself a chance this year. And look at the blowback to that. So, like
– right. Bill Snyder could have done it. Scott Frost can't do it. Like, that's the thing. Yes. Oklahoma, and this isn't, see, people may have an impression this is like number 9 Oklahoma. This is like, oh, come on. This is Oklahoma. No, this is the number one team in the country. They're going to be the preseason number one. They're better than Alabama. They're the best team in the country. They're number one. So they're going to play the number one team in the country in the fourth week of the season. That's going to happen.
But look how we responded to that. I fell out of my chair when I saw what they were doing.
Because you got to take it on the chin. Hey, it's a game. It's a 50th anniversary. You go and you play. You take your medicine. And they figured it out either way. They got Fordham. So
I just think it's a classic example of what you're talking about.
Yes. It is. I think he tried to dip his toe in that, and he was trying to take care of his team, and he got blowback for it. And again, do I really appreciate this idea that the football facility will include an academic center and a training table and a lobby for all student athletes? Yes, I think that's just a wonderful tip of the cap or whatever you want to call it. That's great. I think that's great. But that's an example, again, of like they need a football building really now. They need it. They're behind every other Big Ten team, It didn't need to be a $155 million project. You can build the food place, the mess hall, and the student center later, So, and they broke it up into phases, which was good. But it's just little things like that where you just feel like Scott feels like Scott has to do more than just coach a winning football team. It feels like there's more. And I don't think that's necessarily fair to him, to the program. Like, just go win games, and then the rising tide will lift all boats. All right, next question. What are reasonable expectations for Adrian Martinez? Assume a 12-game schedule.
Well, I'm going to state it in this context. I think he can be one of the top two quarterbacks in the Big Ten, and I would leave the other spot open to, I don't think anybody enters the season more prepared to be better than him. Now, that doesn't mean that, Ohio State doesn't produce somebody better because it's Ohio State. But I think, expectations should be really high for Adrian based on based on his experience level and based on his skill set. And no, I don't think he's one of the top, you know, three or four passers in the Big Ten, but I also think he's going to get a little bit more help at receiver this year. And I think he's, you know, he's incredibly prepared. I think he's an incredibly impressive young man. I think, you know, there's a decent chance that Adrian has a breakout season, sort of a second breakout season.
Evan?
I mean, from a win-loss perspective, they got to make a bowl game. He's a fourth-year starter. He's 11-6, or Nebraska is 11-16 when he starts in his career. This much as he's invested this much, Nebraska's invested this much. You got to make a bowl game this year. I think that's a reasonable expectation from that point of view. I think just with Martinez, though, the good needs to outweigh the bad by a greater margin this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at, he's done some great stuff in his time in Nebraska, some great runs. He's made plays when they aren't there. But you look at some of the numbers, 22 rushing touchdowns in his career. But he has 27 career fumbles, and 15 of those have been lost. So, yeah. You know, that kind of is a wash. He has 31 touchdown passes to 20 interceptions in his career. And in the last 2 years, that's 14 touchdowns to 12 interceptions. So you kind of have this one-to-one thing where you're helping and you're hurting, and you kind of come out somewhere in the middle. So the ability is there. I think as a fourth-year guy, though, you got to clean up those mistakes a little bit more. You know, take away most of those fumbles or interceptions, and then if that has to decrease the touchdown percentage a little bit, fine. Just increase the margin there between what you're doing well and how you're actively hurting the team with turnovers.
Sam, I would say I'm not – this is a small sample size, but I think there's probably a cautionary tale in the Taylor Martinez, Tommy Armstrong scenario, because, you know, you kind of waited for those guys to get over the hump and finally have their banner season as a senior, and it didn't really happen. And I think, you know, we have a tendency – I probably personally have a tendency to think – okay, it's the last year. This guy's finally going to kind of figure it out, right? Mm-hmm. And the reality is, by the time you've started, you know, 30 college games, you kind of are what you are. So I find myself kind of going back and forth between personally just thinking it's a senior, the sense of urgency, the sense of maturity, all this stuff, you know, the guy's finally going to figure it out. But I remind myself that I've thought that before, and it's just tough to sort of flip a switch after 30 career starts and be a different player.
Yes, if Adrian has Taylor Martinez's junior year, he will be Big Ten Player of the Year. So it's worth noting that Taylor had great supporting cast, duly noted. But Taylor threw for 2,871 yards and 23 touchdowns as a junior. He ran for 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. That would make Martinez Player of the Year. And they would also win the West if he does that. I feel pretty confident with that. I don't think he's going to do those numbers. But for what it's worth, here are the last multi-year senior starters that Nebraska has. Multi-year, so we're not including Sam Keller. Tommy Armstrong, Taylor Martinez, Joe Gans, Zach Taylor, Jamal Lord, Eric Crouch, Tommy Frazier, Mike Grant, sort of. Yes, he sort of counts. He was replaced by Frazier midway through the season, but Mike Grant. Jerry Gadowski did not play he did not start multiple seasons. He started one, but it was one of the great best in school history. Steve Taylor, Turner Gill, since 1980. Those are your senior multi-year starters. And that includes, what, 4 of the 10 best quarterbacks in Nebraska school history. Maybe 5. Number 1, Frazier. Number 2, Crouch or Gill, whichever you prefer in that spot. So there's those 3. I would put Zach Taylor among the 10 best in school history. He's probably dueling it out with Ferragamo and Dave Hum. And, you know, I think Steve Taylor probably belongs in there too. Other people disagree with that, but I think he does. So there you go. If there was one team where you said Nebraska should be more like them, what team is it?
I could say Iowa and trigger people.
Yeah, you could. I'll go first, Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I think Nebraska can be Notre Dame or something very close to that. Notre Dame has chosen to hang its hat on a big physical offensive line, a big athletic defense, running the football, and a quarterback who doesn't make too many mistakes. And they have big receivers and tight ends. Like, Notre Dame is one of the biggest teams in the country. Their tight ends are big. Their receivers are big. Their last two tight ends have been picked in the NFL draft. Notre Dame, that's the team that I think Nebraska can become. And Brian Kelly is a spread, no huddle guy in the past. But they've changed the way they play. They're more physical. They're more of a pro-style team. But they still have shotgun spread elements. Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's a good answer. I mean, we often fall back on Wisconsin. But I agree with you that I think Nebraska, you know, can be and probably needs to be a little bit more dynamic, a little bit versatile offensively. Wisconsin obviously has an identity that they've mastered, but I agree that Nebraska, I think offensively, needs to be a little bit more creative than that. So I think Notre Dame's a good one. That's I would concur with that.
Well, I will throw out Iowa, and I know that's Ken. But, and again, this isn't, that's not to say that that's the final destination for Nebraska, but look, I mean, the Hawkeyes, they have their stability in that program, that those guys don't beat themselves. My goodness, they have an identity that they've recruited to for a long time. They develop talent and produce NFL draft picks at a pretty high rate. And then you look, they have a high floor. And I think Nebraska should be a program that has a high floor. I mean, the last 20 years, Iowa's missed like two bowl games. So their bad seasons aren't that bad. And their good seasons, those 11-2 years that they've had, they were undefeated in 2015. Like, there's no reason Nebraska can't have a season like that over the course of a decade, two seasons like that, where they win 10, 11 games. Like, there's no reason that shouldn't be the case at Nebraska. So in those senses, more from a cultural sense, maybe than a schematic one, I think absolutely Nebraska would benefit from being more like Iowa.
I would have said coming into the league or when Frost got here that they were going to try to be more like Oklahoma. They were going to be the Big 12 team in the Big 10. And I just don't know if that's going to be their identity. I think their identity is going to be a little bit more physical than that. Maybe if they can throw the ball a little bit more than some other teams, yes. But, you know, I was wrong. I like saying I'm wrong. I say it often to my wife. I was wrong. I thought when I was watching Nebraska and Purdue in 2018, when Purdue beat Ohio State, you guys remember that game, Purdue beat Ohio State, Nebraska was starting to get going after an 0-6 start. I'm like, that's the future. That's the future of this league. In 5 years, we're going to be talking about Nebraska and Purdue throwing the ball around the yard. Maybe they're not winning the Big Ten West, but they're both pretty good, and you got to look out for them. That hasn't happened. What has happened is and for what it's worth, Wisconsin is worse. They're not as good of a program. Northwestern won two of the last three Big Ten West titles, and very, very easily, Wisconsin could have lost the one in whatever year that was. They beat Minnesota on the last weekend, right, in 2019. Wisconsin's not as good as it was 5 years ago. I don't care what anybody says. They have suffered a decline. They're not as good of a program. But what has happened is you've seen Northwestern, which plays a hell of a lot like Notre Dame, fill that gap. And Minnesota, which is a big team that runs the ball and throws play-action passes, has filled the gap. It hasn't been Purdue, and it hasn't been Nebraska. So I was wrong. I didn't anticipate Minnesota and Northwestern being those teams.
Guys, what is the what's the position that went number four in the NFL draft? What's the position that transformed New England's offense? What's the position that is arguably most important to Patrick Mahomes? What is the position that has been the showcase for Iowa football over the last 5 or 10 years?
Yeah.
It's the tight end.
Yeah.
And Nebraska is either lucking itself into, or, you know, I'm not suggesting that they didn't do it on purpose, but Nebraska can be what Iowa is in terms of tight end,
no question,
production and development.
Yeah,
and if it is, if Nebraska is running two tight end sets, and you know, one time you line him up, you know, Thomas Fedoni, you line him up on the end, and you know, you run power to his side, and the next time you split him out wide and you match him up against a safety or a linebacker, that is most likely Nebraska's best path to offensive success. So yeah. I think we never would have said that 4 years ago. We never would have envisioned it, but man, that sure seems like Nebraska's best ticket.
And those guys actually grow up here. That's the great thing. It sucks that Caden Helms and Mike Riley-Ducker are not going to go to Nebraska. It's too bad. I don't know how things are going to go for them. I hope the best for them. They're good kids. They're smart. I think one of them is going to go to OU, which I don't know what OU is going to do with their tight ends, and I don't know exactly where the other one's going to go. Riley-Ducker might go to Auburn or somewhere else, and that's all great, but the Big Ten's a great place for a tight end to be. And you know, Nebraska – These are the kind of kids you get in Nebraska. They were former basketball players growing up. They're about 6'5", 245. That's a tight end.
Guys, there's an Austin Allen every year at the Boise State basketball tournament.
There is.
And you know, maybe some that are better than Austin Allen. Nebraska is we talk a lot about recruiting, you know, territory and the types of players that come out of your state, man, there's a lot of kids like that. And, you know, I think a lot of them are multi-sport athletes that are good competitors, you know, really strong based on, you know, football, basketball, track. Sometimes they're a little bit unpolished, probably like Austin Allen was coming out. But that can be a pipeline that Frost really leans into. And if you go back at Osborne's, if you go back to Osborne's offenses, you know, one of his components of his genius was that he identified his deficiencies and he hid those deficiencies. So, you know, he knew that he couldn't bring in NFL wide receivers. So he created an offense that covered up those weaknesses at the same time that enhanced his strengths. And I think Frost could do the same thing.
Amen to that. That's a great point. That's a terrific point. Because the offense that Frost brought here actually relies upon great receivers, and they've modified that a little. That's a hell of a point. Last question. If you had to pick six wins right now in Nebraska's 2021 schedule, what six would it be? That gets them to the bowl.
I would go the first three, Illinois, Fordham, Buffalo. And then I would go Purdue at home. And I got to find two more, and I would probably take I don't trust that Michigan State game after Oklahoma, so I would pick Northwestern at home, and then I would probably pick a road win at Minnesota.
Okay, there's your six. You want to go seven, or you just feel good with six?
No, I think they'll get to seven. I think they'll beat Michigan or Iowa or Michigan State. I just am not sure that I trust that road game right after Oklahoma.
So Dirk six were Illinois, Fordham, Buffalo, Purdue, at Minnesota.
Minnesota, Northwestern.
Northwestern. Okay. Evan?
Mine's pretty similar. Illinois, Fordham, Buffalo, I think are all very winnable. Purdue at home. Northwestern at home. I think Michigan State has a ways to go as a program, even coming off of the Oklahoma game for Nebraska. I think Michigan State's starting over in a lot of different ways. And so that's a game that Nebraska can go win. So I would give them seven as well. I think those are the six that I would feel the best about. And then
bonus seven.
Well, whoever the seventh is, I think it's one of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, or Iowa. I think they beat one of those.
What's your bonus seven?
Michigan would be my bonus seven.
And what was your bonus seven? You got to pick just one, Dirk.
Michigan.
Okay. My list is exactly the same as Evan's. So we have the same list. And I have seven, but the six and then Michigan instead of at Minnesota. Otherwise, our lists are almost exactly the same. Well, no, that's not quite true. So Dirk does not have Michigan State. He has the others. So the one he doesn't have is at Michigan State, and he does have at Minnesota, and we have at Michigan State and not at Minnesota.
Now, keep in mind that's telling the listeners that none of us are picking them to beat Iowa at the start of the year, which
– Well, if you're telling me seven –
No, I know,
those are the first seven that I come and this is where I say, now what we're saying is Iowa's better than Northwestern. And I believe that. I believe it every year. Now, that doesn't always bear out in the games. Lord knows. Northwestern has beaten Iowa multiple times, including twice in a row at home. But I'm hard pressed every year to say Northwestern's better than Iowa or Nebraska for that matter. The fact that they beat those teams is a commentary on the teams they beat more than it's a commentary on Northwestern. But that leads us into the piece that Dirk wrote earlier this week, which was short and to the point, that Nebraska has struggled to have players drafted at the top of the NFL draft. And the reason that Northwestern is pertinent is for maybe the first time in since forever, Northwestern had two players selected in the first round of the NFL draft. Rashawn Slater, who didn't play this year, so he really doesn't count because he didn't even play this season. He opted out. And Greg Newsome, who is a cornerback there, who was not rated as high as many, many cornerbacks that Nebraska has selected and did not successfully develop. Nebraska's issue is that they haven't had a top 100 player selected since Amir Abdullah. Is that right, Dirk?
Top 100.
Or Malik Collins, the last one.
Yeah, Collins, I think, would have been top 100. I gotta check that.
So basically, since 2016, they haven't had a top 100 pick. And of course, the offensive drought goes back a long ways in terms of first rounders. But I'll let you take it from there.
No, it's one. You know, 150 is kind of the cutoff. You know, Hymus was the top guy. You know, for 5 years, and you know, first 150 guy in 5 years, and. You know, Nebraska is just, they've just lacked the game breaker. They've lacked, you know, it's like I described it to you last week. They got to have the best player on the field more often than they do. This is not basketball where the best player in the field almost always wins, but it is a situation where Nebraska just doesn't have enough difference makers. And, you know, we can point to quarterback, pass rusher, you know, lots of different positions where that really matters. But Nebraska, you know, almost stunningly so, is so far behind in producing those, you know, top 150 NFL draft picks. And again, I sort of go back to, not that this matters, but it matters in our perception. You know, I look at Stanley Morgan, Divine Azigbo. I mean, these are guys that people around here loved, you know. I mean, they really thought were great, great players, and I enjoyed watching them too, but NFL scouts did not agree. And there's a huge disconnect right now, and has been for the last decade, frankly, between where Nebraska fans think their players are on the talent scale and where NFL scouts think Nebraska players are on the talent scale. And man, at some point that's got to change if Nebraska is going to get good. To be frank, Sam, they need an Amir Abdullah and a Levante David. I mean, Ohio State's got five of those guys every year. Iowa's got two of those guys every year. Nebraska needs one of them, and they haven't had one of them for quite a while.
Couple thoughts. First, yes, I think that's true. They really struggled to get the kind of players in here, or when they've gotten the athletes who you're like, that guy could be really special, he doesn't last. He leaves a program or something like that. The latest, honestly, if you look at Omar Manning, you're like, that guy should play in the NFL. Now it's up to Nebraska to figure out how they're going to develop him and put him in that spot. You know, like, how are they going to, Nebraska's got to get this kid in a position to be really, really good. The second thing I'll say is the NFL is really changing. And one of the things that's changing about it is college production is getting turned down. And I don't want to say the scouts' arrogance, but arrogance is getting turned up. There's just really not a lot of justification for some of the players who didn't get drafted. It seems strange to me. And some of the players who were selected in the first round of the NFL draft, where they were, is very surprising. And it's been anecdotally proven. I mean, if you go back and look at it, Alabama players are overrated by the scouts. Alabama players, receivers are an exception. Receivers are an exception. Many, many Alabama players are overrated. They're not nearly as good as their NFL draft status would confer on them. And that covers many, many, many positions. Not receiver. Receiver, it's not true. And interior defensive line, you know, it's not true. Marcel Darius was a very good player, so on and so on. But Alabama quarterbacks have not been good. Tua was not good last year. And anybody who tells you that Tua was good didn't watch Tua very much. And so there's questions about whether Mac Jones is actually very good. Most of the Alabama running backs, with the exception of Derrick Henry, who could have been good at UNO, have not been very good. So there's things going on in the drafts. I can't explain to you why Jarrett Patterson wasn't drafted. I don't know why. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And 20 years ago, he would have been drafted in the third round. I don't know why he wasn't drafted. It's baffling to me.
But that doesn't explain why Nebraska
is so far
behind Big Ten peers. I mean,
it doesn't.
You know, what Iowa has done with NFL draft production compared to Nebraska,
no question,
is just startling.
No question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that there are great college players like Patty Fisher at Northwestern, who I think, I don't know, was all Big Ten 4 years in a row and he wasn't drafted. I don't know why. Like, I can't speak to that. Did he not run a 40 well enough? Is he not move laterally well enough? I don't know. But those kind of things are odd to me. Like, I don't really understand. I think that there's just things that are like, this guy's going to be good and this guy's not going to be good. And we think so because we think so. And there you go. And, you know, if you were to ask Brendan Hymus, I think Brendan Hymus would say he thinks he's a first or second round draft pick and that he's going to prove that very quickly. And so the Chargers drafted Rashawn Slater. And, you know, Hymus' perspective is Rashawn Slater might play at guard and I may play at tackle. Now, Hymus is a confident guy, but I think he might be right. I think he might. I think Slater's going to be a really good guard in the NFL.
Sam, I just think, and this goes back to player development, but take a guy like Lamar Jackson. Okay.
Yes, he should have gotten drafted.
Lamar Jackson comes in. The optimistic Nebraska fans are thinking, that's a first-round guy. That's Fabian Washington.
Right.
And 4 years later, he doesn't get drafted. And, you know, he's been in the NFL a little bit. But that's a guy from a player development standpoint where you're just like, what is Nebraska doing wrong?
Right. That's
fair. Where that guy under the old system – is a sure, even Bill Callahan's system or even Bo Pelini's system, that guy is probably a top three round NFL draft pick. And agreed. Instead he's not getting selected at all. What is the flaw in the machine where that guy is not improving between his freshman year and senior year like he would have 10 or 20 years ago?
Sure. That's fair. I agree with you. I agree. He did get better. He was better as a senior. And again, and this, I'm augmenting your point when I say Nebraska is somewhere, and this was true in Riley and now apparently in Frost. Nebraska's got to do a better job of communicating somehow that these kids, they got to win more games, and they've got to get to a point where, you know, these kids are getting the visibility they deserve. So one thing Hymus said to me is like, I never was above honorable mention all Big Ten, and I'm like, you're right, and you should have been. He's like, and he got drafted in front of like four guys who were picked ahead of him in all Big Ten. And Hymus wasn't bad in college. It wasn't like an upside deal. He really was good. And yet there were guys that didn't get drafted who ended up higher than he did in this all Big Ten list, and that stuff matters. And like, so for in the sense of Lamar Jackson, I'm not sure what happened, but anybody who's starting as a rookie, which he was, is probably somebody who should have been drafted.
Well, how many times have we seen Nebraska guys in the NFL that went undrafted that go on to have good careers?
Right.
They were Chris playing out of position.
An example of that.
I mean, that's a big part of that. On the line, how many linemen went undrafted and went on to have good pro careers?
Right. So, let's see. Lamar Jackson started 6 games last year, and he wasn't drafted. That seems odd to me. That just seems odd to me. That you know, somebody was like, yeah, we're not going to draft a guy that started last year.
It was the Jets. We can't.
That's probably more of a commentary on New York.
Okay.
I'm kidding.
No, you're right. You're right in that sense. They weren't a great defense. They were the worst offense maybe in football history. Their defense wasn't great either. They weren't that bad, but that's part of the issue, is like somewhere along the way, there's a disconnect between what pro people think is coming out of Nebraska and what's actually coming out of Nebraska. Because Lamar Jackson probably should have been drafted. Like, I'm not trying to be like pro Lamar Jackson there and saying that. He should have been drafted. Why wasn't he? I don't know. I mean, that's just a hard question to answer. But the point of your column is that Nebraska doesn't have the kind of players that are getting picked in the first 2 rounds of the draft. And I think that's probably true, that they don't have those players in their program. Or if they do, they're not developing them. And Lamar Jackson, indeed, should have probably been a three-round, first 3-round pick if he played for Frank Bowl, for example. Do you have any doubt that Lamar Jackson's going to have a better pro career than Stanley, Jean Baptiste?
I mean, it's too – I don't know. It's – what – I don't know.
Stanley was picked in the 2nd round.
I know. I don't know all of the factors that went into Stanley's lack of success. I think he was a measurable guy who they kind of fell in love with.
Sure.
I just want to
be honest. It's a trick question because he already has a better career. Stanley never started a game in the NFL.
I know. Part of it is
he already has one.
Yeah. Part of it, frankly, is Nebraska is not getting the just knock you off your socks measurables guy. Sure. I mean, Fabian went in the 1st round because he was a knock you off of your chair measurables guy. Adam Carricker went in the 1st round because he was a measurables guy. And
no, you get it. I get it.
I'm not saying he wasn't a great player, but there's certain guys who are, it almost doesn't matter what their production was in college because they just jump off the page, when it comes testing. And Nebraska has had very few of those guys over the last 5 years.
Yeah. I think when you have a lot of coaching turnover, which Nebraska has, you lose allies. These kids lose allies in the program. And so, like, having Frost there for 10 years will help their NFL draft stock if he's there for 10 years. Nick Gates is another example. Guy should have been drafted. Nick was a good player and is a good player now. Now, Nick had a weird junior year in 2017 because it all went sour and everybody was pissed off and people were just ready to screw this. But, I mean, Nick Gates just signed a 2-year contract for $7 million and he's a starter and will be a starter for, 8 to 10 years in the NFL. And he didn't get drafted. So that's a little odd. Some of it's guys just falling through the cracks or whatever. The reason I like your column, Dirk, and this is true of a lot of the things you write, is it provokes so many thoughts in me because I'm like, that's true. Nebraska has not had this happen. And why has that not happened? And some of it is, and there's so many different issues that's how you know it's a problem, is because you can talk about 4 different things and they're all kind of true. And that's when you're like, and that adds up to an issue. Like, that's an issue. Iowa doesn't have that issue. Iowa's been able to produce first round NFL picks in what, 3 of the last 5 years? Something like that?
Yeah.
I don't remember if Epinesa went in the 1st round, but yeah, Hockenson did. Fant did.
Including a guy from under Nebraska's nose, Omaha South High School. So
that's the worst miss of all the in-state dudes. That's the worst one. And that's Mike Riley's fault, Hank Hughes, but it's also Mike's fault. I went back and looked at a recruiting thing I read, wrote something on a message board of how Nebraska was looking at Noah Fant as a defensive end. I'm like, what was Nebraska thinking? What were they thinking? You just gave up the most explosive tight end in the country. And he went down to a game on an unofficial visit, and they didn't let him in the locker room. What were they thinking?
What did we just say about you know, forwards at the 6'5" forwards at the Boise State basketball tournament? Sam, you wrote a whole column about Noah Fant as a tight end on the floor at the Pinnacle Bank Arena in the state basketball tournament.
Ah, Noah, and that's the worst one. And Harrison Phillips is probably number two. People always mention Drew Ott, but I still think Fant and Phillips were bigger whiffs. I don't know. It's going to be hard to ever top Noah Fant. That's going to be tough. And Helms and Riley Ducker, as good as they might be, Nebraska put their – Sean Becton did what he could. This doesn't have anything to do with Nebraska. These are two kids that want to leave, and that's it. But Nebraska blew it with Fant. All right. Evan, baseball. Bed crapping over the weekend. How'd that – your fault.
Yeah, my fault. You. Yeah, no, that they lost a lot. I mean, they lost the three games. I was surprised to have to look up on – well, not just that they got swept. I was surprised at how they had never been swept at home in the Big Ten era. Like, you got to go back to Missouri in 2009 for the last time they were swept at home in a conference series. And it's only happened three times in their Big Ten time in the last decade at all.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, that's a testament to how stable the program has been and maybe how not great the Big Ten has been too. But, yeah, I mean, they lost their national ranking. They lost first place in the Big Ten, and they essentially lost the chance to host a regional because of what happened and when it happened. And, of course, it's all made worse by the fact that it, you know, happens on the cusp of them joining the top 25, and it happens at home on a weekend when a bunch of people are in town for the spring game for football. So I think in some senses it was blown out a little bit from people. It's a little bit worse than it actually was. I mean, the bullpen did blow two games in the eighth inning, but you know, they hadn't blown any to this point. They were playing probably a little bit ahead of their skis for a lot of the year. And so a lot of it just kind of came back on them at the same time. I mean, I wrote a piece this week about some of the things that they've done differently the last 2 weeks when they've struggled from what it had been earlier in the season. And so, you know, a lot of it's been, they haven't had those big innings where you're scoring four or five runs. And when you do that, even in one inning, your bullpen is looking a lot better, right? Because it's not a one run game. There's not a ton of pressure hanging on every pitch as there might be. And then, you know, offensively, I think is where it's really been kind of scuffling. A lot of these guys just are hitting slumps at the same time. Nebraska's had the top six guys in their order the same for 19 games in a row. And you go down and you look at some of the numbers. I mean, you know, guys are 2 for 28, 3 for 26. There's just a lot of slumps that are coinciding at the same point. So, you know, they could have easily salvaged a game or won the series if Friday and Saturday had gone a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. But now it sets up a weekend, this weekend, this pod series, where they're playing two against Indiana, which is in first place, two more against Rutgers, which just came to Lincoln and swept you. And it's really interesting because if Nebraska does well, if they respond, and I think they can, they've shown that they have been able to do that all year, then they're right back in the thick of things. Then they're contending for the Big Ten down the stretch. They're talking about postseason seeding and all that. If you go 1-3, or if you drop them all against some good teams, suddenly you're a bubble team. And you go from the group that was projected to host a regional to being right on the fringe where your RPI is not good because you're in the Big Ten and it's a league-only schedule. So it is. It's kind of a turning point sort of weekend where they had built up all this equity. They blew it last weekend. And so now what kind of tone do they set here for the stretch run in the next 4 weeks?
I figured it'd catch up to their pitching a little bit. I figured that would happen.
You're right, Evan. It's
I'm surprised their offenses went down, but
You make a great comparison. And this feels like it happens to Nebraska baseball several times over the last 15 years, where, you know, it's like the teenage kid that saves up $60, you know, mowing lawns, and then goes to the freaking county fair and burns it all on the Papa Shot deal. You know, they're back down to $20, you know, and it's like, okay, what do you do now?
Yeah.
Evan, I could have used a casino metaphor with you, but I chose to, you know, be a little bit more appropriate than that.
Okay. Yeah.
They don't play Nebraska men's athletics struggles to play with house money. Using the casino metaphor. So many different times when Nebraska football, especially under Bo, had a chance to win something really big and they just fell short. They're up 17-0 against OU in the 2010 Big Ten Championship and play three really bad quarters of football. Like, they should have won that game. They know they should have, and they blow it. All they have to do is kick the ball into the end zone in the 2009 Big 12 Championship game, and they can't. Nebraska basketball has this big game against Michigan at the Big Ten tournament. And not only do they lose, but they're not there. They were out of it. You know, they didn't play well. They go to the NCAA tournament and they look like a JV team against Baylor. They did, sort of Creighton, but they looked like a JV team. Rarely, there are exceptions to the rule. No Sit Sunday is one. But if you think about like the last two regionals they've hosted, which were a long time ago, I know, but those were flops. I mean, and so it feels like within the athletic program, when they get on the cusp of something really big, that's when they fall short.
Yeah.
And that was a cusp weekend.
And why do you guys think that is? Because I always get the sense that they start reading their headlines or they start checking the message boards or like they feel the gravity of the moment more than most teams across the country. And I know we follow Nebraska closer than we do other teams, but it feels like other teams don't get caught up or crumble under these kind of pressure situations the way Nebraska has in these big moments. And maybe that's because Nebraska athletics is the only show in town and some of these other teams can operate more anonymously. That plays into it probably, but doesn't it feel that way? Like it just, these are situations psychologically that you don't see play out with a lot of other teams that are trying to break through around the country.
I don't know, Evan. I feel like it's the question of the last 20 years. In some cases, I think Nebraska just wasn't good enough. You know, that 2012 Big Ten championship game against Wisconsin. No, they shouldn't have lost 70-31. But they also shouldn't have been 10-2 going into that game. So
that's true.
You know, some of these baseball teams over the last 10, 15 years, you know, the ones that got into May and looked like they might be a regional host or, you know, a top two seed in the NCAAs and then crumbled, I'm not sure they were good enough to start with. So it's a lot of different things. I think it's probably a little bit more team specific than we identify, but I think your point is valid that the fan base tends to get excited about these things that, you know, that are not fully formed, right? The accomplishment is not complete. And the interesting part is you contrast it with a volleyball program that runs into pressure time and time again and steps up. And that doesn't mean they win every match, but, you know, I feel like they've done a much better job of rising to the occasion. I don't know. I think it's probably a lot of different variables.
Well, I think as it relates to Cook, the one thing that we know is true about Coach Cook is that he's constantly putting players into matches that he thinks are going to win the matches. Like he's not afraid to put freshmen in, to put freshmen in over seniors if he thinks they're going to win the game. I mean, I think John Cook does an excellent job of winning volleyball games. He's just really good at that. As it related to baseball, Evan, I don't know if this is going to be true of Obolt or not. I would say that his predecessor was so like every game is the same that when they went to the regional and they lost to who did the hell did they lose to?
Yale
and Wagner, or I don't even remember who the second team was.
Holy crap. Like,
this team is not prepared to do anything here, because this is not, you know, the coach did not prepare them to go into these games with a heightened sense of whatever. And so there was that moment. In football, I think it was Bo-centric. I mean, Bo got those guys into such an emotional state that when things went bad in big games, they collapsed. They just literally, we're going to lose now. And so that was some of Bo. And Bo, that what Bo was excellent at was motivating through negative emotions and fear. And so they never lost games they shouldn't have won. They shouldn't have lost. They were brilliant at that. They almost lost to McNeese State, but they didn't lose to McNeese State. They almost lost to, you know, crap team A, but they didn't lose to crap team A. Right. Well, under Riley and Frost, they've lost to crap team A.
Yeah. 2 points on that. One, they beat McNeese State because they had the best player on the field.
Yes, they did.
Sports, yeah. You know, Nebraska football, especially, they need the best player. They need the best player on the damn field.
Yeah.
Secondly, there's this weird paradox with college sports where these high school kids have no concept of history. They don't care what uniform they wear. You throw them into a program and they're just, you know, completely oblivious. And at the same time, if that program, some of these programs that don't have a pattern or a quote culture of winning, it's so hard for them to get over the hump. You know, it's like, why is it that a 17-year-old kid, if you send him to one program, he flourishes at age 19. And if you send him to another one, he, you know, consistently comes up short of his own personal expectations and potential. I don't get it. I think it's one of the, you know, especially in this transfer climate, that question becomes probably even more interesting. But to me, it's just this incredible paradox where kids really don't know. You know, they don't know that Nebraska hasn't won anything in 20 years. They haven't been following all those frustrations. They don't know anything about the 2009-2012 conference championship games. And at the same time, when they come here, it's like those expectations and burdens fall on them. Mm-hmm. Why is that? I don't know.
Big weekend for the baseball team. I suspect they'll go 2-2. As it relates to the current baseball team, Evan, and there's, I'm not going to use the player's name because why do we need to? But there's a current player on that team, and we've talked about this player before. We're like, so long as that player is still on that team, they haven't arrived yet. And playing as much as that player does, you know, they still have issues. And sooner or later, what you hope for the baseball program and for basketball or whatever is that for basketball, for example, Charlie Easley isn't getting major minutes anymore because, you know, the game's on the line at Rutgers. If he makes the three, they're going to win the game. And that's not the guy you want out there shooting the corner three.
Sure.
It's just not. It makes for a great story if he makes it, but he didn't make it. And now he's at South Dakota and he's a great kid. And but that's what I mean is that there's still too many guys within the baseball program. We're getting a lot of at-bats and a lot of moments of games. And it's like, so long as those players are getting those kind of moments, you know that there's still room to grow.
Yeah, and there's no debating that. I mean, if Drew Christo were at Nebraska right now, he'd be a weekend starter for them probably. I mean, he's that good. So, like, they have guys coming in. And you talk about rebuilds for football. I mean, this is still just the second year for baseball, and they're – their growing year was wiped out by the pandemic. That year one was not going to be a great baseball team in 2020. They had bullpen issues, a lot of different issues that they solved through the transfer portal and things like that. They're getting there. But what I do think they have a really – contrast this with what we just talked about with Nebraska football. Like, Nebraska baseball absolutely knows what it wants to be. I mean, the coaches can in detail tell you how they want their offense to be. They can in detail tell you what they're looking for in their different pitchers. They can tell you how they're recruiting and where these different guys fit into the grid of a team. And the culture thing too. I mean, I can't tell you how many guys this year have said like the phrase, I don't care, as it relates to circumstances with traveling, as it relates to slumps. Like, it's, as a guy who covers both programs a lot, like, it's just, it's so different. The culture that they have over there, their vision, how they execute it. And I know it's a different sport and it's harder to project football players certainly than baseball players at a young age, but like I can see kind of where that's going. The football thing, it like we've said, it's still kind of cooking. Like, we don't really know how that's going to shake out. The baseball thing, they know where they want to go. They might not have the talent to be there yet, but it does feel like they're heading that way pretty imminently.
Cool. Let's end on an up note. That's all we have for this week. I think we'll be back next week. I don't know. We'll talk more baseball, maybe a little more football. We'll talk basketball. Nebraska basketball added a guy on Monday. I don't think many people know much of that about that guy. We need to have kind of a roster reset and just sort of a summer conversation about that, and then we'll pick up basketball again in the fall. But we'll have a conversation in the next couple of weeks about where that program's at. They feel like they're in a good spot, but we'll talk about it. And then more football, I suppose. But that's all we've kind of got for this moment. So for Evan Bland and Dirk Chatelain, I'm Sam McEwen. Thanks for listening to the Pick Six Podcast. Take care.